What's up, martial artists? Welcome to Black Belt, a martial arts lifestyle podcast. I'm your host, Harinder Singh, and we're going to bridge the gap between sport, tradition, and reality. Join me as I sit down with world-class practitioners to discuss their lifestyles, to teach you about their mindset, training, and fighting methods so that we can grow from their wisdom. My guest this episode is Grandmaster Darren Tabone, who was a personal student and graduate of great Grandmaster Angel Caballos' Sarada Eskrima. Angel Caballos was known as the teacher of teachers, and in 1967 was one of the first to commercially teach the Filipino martial arts, and he heavily influenced their spread across the United States. I'm honored to sit down with Grandmaster Darren Tabone, who is one of my personal teachers, the head of Angel's disciple Stockton, and the founder of the Legacy Events, which were designed to unite Filipino martial artists of all styles and systems and preserve the teachings of their grandmasters. In this episode, we discuss the history of Sarada Eskrima and how it was developed by Angel Caballos. We also discuss Darren Tabone's private training with Angel Caballos and how he carries on the legacy today. My key takeaway is that high performance in any art is directly related to the training method. The ability to teach the knowledge you have is the most important thing. We dive deep into drilling, flowing, and fighting strategy. We discuss how to read and set up your opponent, how to close the distance, how to generate power and control, how to build reflexes and counter your opponent's counters. After all, fighting is a chess match and everything is an illusion. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and I hope you do too. What's up, everybody? How you guys doing? It's Sifu Singh here. I'm back on another episode of the Black Belt Podcast. I'm really honored to have my guest here. He's one of my personal teachers, Grandmaster Darren Tabone. Welcome to the show, sir.
It's an honor to be here, Harinder. First of all, it's great to see you. You know, I know COVID set things back for us the past couple of years, but I do miss seeing you. And here we are today talking, you know, on this Black Belt Podcast. So, hey, the honor is mine to be on this show. Thank you very much for letting me participate. And let's have fun, brother. Let's have fun.
Let's do it. Well, it's good to see you again, too. It's been a while with COVID. I'm going to get up there and we get our training back on. But, you know, you represent Angel Caballos and Sarada Eskrima. And for those of the people listening, we have a wide variety of martial artists listening. We have people from traditional martial arts backgrounds. We have people from sport backgrounds and then, you know, military reality-based backgrounds. So all the whole martial art community is listening. I would love for you to tell me a little bit about Angel Caballos and his development of Sarada. And I know that I want to walk through the whole stages first discussing him, because he's one of the masters that is really responsible for bringing Filipino martial arts to the forefront, you know, and teaching great masters who went on to have great careers. But I would really like to get a better idea about Angel. I know, of course, but I would love for the audience to understand who Angel was and how Sarada was developed.
Well, you know, going back to the many private lessons I had, I took over 2 years of just private lessons alone, you know, and my time with Angel Private, my time frame was on Sundays, 9 o'clock in the morning, sometimes till 9 o'clock at night, because I'd get my training. And then after about 3 hours in, you know, Angel, he always cooked a lunch or a dinner, you know, and I guess that was kind of like his tradition. You do private lessons with him and then he cooked and we eat. But at the same time we ate, he'd share a lot of his history with me. And, you know, the cool thing about it is I got brothers of Sarada, like Brother Sultanuddin. And many years later, as we shared our same stories together, everything matched up, you know. And maybe there's some things I did not learn about what developed in the Philippines. It was shared with me also, you know. A lot of people got to understand, you know, everybody knows that late Grandmaster Angel Caballos' teacher was Felicissimo Dizon. What I found to notice in listening, having the opportunity to watch live videos that Brother Sultanuddin had filmed, you know, back in 93 and then 94, he lived there for 4 months. And he not only lived there, but became very close to the late Tatang Ilustrissimo, Grandmaster Mina, Shug de Larga, among many others, that he had an opportunity to demonstrate Sorata Eskrima to all of these grandmasters. But what I found very interesting about it is, as Brother Sultan explained to me, breaking down Sorata Eskrima as the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas taught it in front of all these grandmasters, the first thing they said was, "Dizon." It was so apparent of what late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas taught us that for these older guys that knew Felicissimo Dizon, that were aware and knew Angel Cabalas, to bring an art back to the Philippines after late Grandmaster leaving in 1939, and then a student of his having the opportunity to go to the Philippines and demonstrate what late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas taught him, but to be recognized as Dizon. It tells me how clear Angel taught the art of Sorata Eskrima as connected to Felicissimo Dizon. They referred to Dizon as Simo. That's how what they called him, Simo. Felicissimo Dizon Simo. But he was the elder. You know, so when you read what a lot of historians or writers write about, sometimes when you analyze stories versus what you're hearing from people that were very close to Felicissimo Dizon, you know, you can see where people go in their own directions. Do they add to it? Do they make it more than what it really was at that time? But bottom line was, Felicissimo Dizon had his own. And another thing that a lot of people are going to realize, and they might not realize it because of other stories people talk about, Felicissimo Dizon only had one student, and that was the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas. Now, you can read what, you know, some other writers are writing, but coming from the Society of Grandmasters, that GM Sultanuddin had the opportunity to film and record these guys talking about it. I believe in the old Society of Grandmasters who were there talking about Felicissimo Dizon had his own. So what really makes me look at the art in fascination is the fact that Dizon was only known to have one student, and that was late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas. So, yes, it was a very, very secretive art at that time. But, you know, when you bring something back after all the many years Angel left in 39, and then somebody goes back over 30 years later, close to 40 years later, demonstrate the art, and right off the bat, Dizon's art. They knew who Angel Cabalas was, but Angel Cabalas was known as the Eskrimador who challenged Captain Villicent. I believe he was the Villicent family, Balintawa. Well, late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas, before he left the Philippines, did post a challenge to Captain Villicent. So that's how they remembered Angel Cabalas, outside of all the other matches Angel had. He was well known in that area for posting a challenge against Captain Villicent. So that's how they knew him as a young man of, I believe, 23 years old. That's another thing people, they're getting age differences. But, you know, Brother Sultan shared with me that, you know, the way people talk about Angel as a young teenager, I learned that he was the same age as Grandmaster Mina. So in leaving the Philippines at 23, instead of some say 18. So I believe what I have seen on film, I believe what's been recorded by these elders, who also refer to Felicissimo Dizon as an elder, you know. And another thing, you know, you hear people talk and write about Felicissimo Dizon getting beat by the moral prince. Well, I hear a whole different story from that. I heard and I listened that the match was the opening of the games. It was the elder champion. It's like Muhammad Ali, okay, going 15, 20 seconds with Roy Jones Jr. in his prime, introducing him to the audience before the matches begin. Okay. So there's so much history that I've read. I've listened to other people write, you know, and it doesn't match up with a lot of the information I've been shared with. And ain't too many people that have been shared the information I had the opportunity to not only listen to, but watch. So, you know, it gave me a clearer picture on who Felicissimo Dizon was and his student, late Grandmaster Angel Caballes, you know, and I couldn't be more honored for this to be the lineage I chose to represent my whole life, exactly. Basically my whole adult life. So, yes.
So, you know, tell us a little bit more about Dizon and what he did as a profession.
As a professional?
Yeah, as a profession, what he did.
Okay. Here's another thing, you know, you hear. You know, I've recently seen an interview, and I won't say no names, but, you know, they pictured Dizon and that whole society group as if they were like, I don't know, racketeer. What these men were, they worked for the society, the community of people. And in learning more about them, they were no different than samurai. Okay, they were, yes, hired people to protect businesses like that. But, you know, in all societies, if you don't have law enforcement, you hire professionals, okay, to oversee your business, transaction of money. These guys, they were like samurai at that time, you know. Some call them verdugos, you know. Now were they assassins? I believe at the time Japan invaded the Philippines, I believe, yes, you know, but they were protecting their people. But, you know, when you look at Felicissimo Dizon and you look at his era, you know, you're looking at Datong Ilustrissimo's father, uncles, elders, Isla Romo. That's Dizon's era. Coming into the Society of Grand Masters, it's well documented too. You know, first of all, there's documentation of the Society of Grand Masters in 1953. There's information. Written document in 1953, the Society of Grand Masters, upwards of 16 Esquimadors, with their signatures, all documented in 53. So when you look at a lot of other people's writings, you know, what they write about, late Grandmaster and Angel Caballes' relationship with Dizon, a lot of times you look at the dates and times and you see discrepancies. You know, just in that. As a matter of fact, one guy brought up how there's a gentleman, his father trained under Dizon. Okay, so he trained with Dizon. And I believe it was set up in 52 to 54. So then when you look at the Society of Grand Masters at that time, and that's documented in 53, for some reason, if he was Dizon's student, why isn't his name documented with the Society of Grand Masters in 53? So I think what's happening, because of the reputation of late Grandmaster Angel Caballes Serrata Escrima in general, I think there's a lot of people that could be attaching to the lineage of late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas to Dizon. You know, I don't want to call them liars, but there's documentation of these times going all the way up to 63, you know, where you have the Society of Grandmasters, Felicissimo Dizon's name on it, along with Tatang Ilustrissimo, Grandmaster Mina, okay? And they were to go to Tokyo Games 63 and demonstrate Filipino martial arts. But when you look at the time of the war to 63, there might have been still some bad feelings there. That trip never happened, but it's documented that it was being brought together for these Escrimadores to go to the Philippines. So, you know, there's a lot more documents than what you read today that people are writing about in regards to Felicissimo Dizon. There's even people that have written and claim that he comes from Laguna. No. Sudlun Cebu, that's where his training came from, the caves of Sudlun. Late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas told me this, as well as several of his other master students, that they trained in Sudlun, Cebu, the caves of Cebu. And with new articles popping up here and there, I guess, I don't know, the popularity of late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas, Felicissimo Dizon, the whole lineage thing, I'm seeing so many people writing different things than what I know for a fact that I've seen on video, I've listened to it, so I know who I'm going to believe, okay? But as far as the art, it was also shared with me that the training length weapon that Felicissimo Dizon trained with in the caves of Sudlun was as short as 12 to 14 inches. So, you know, it's said in the earlier Cabala Serrata students that Angel taught the longer weapon. Okay. But then as you've seen time go, my era, the short weapon, from the palm of your hand to the armpit. Okay. And that comes out to about 18 to 21 to 23 inches. Okay, cool. But I noticed one thing. The older Angel got, he started going back to his original, what he learned from Felicissimo Dizon. So, you know, looking at the foundation of Cabala Serrata Escrima is Spotty Adaga, it's all through the art. Yes. It's a very unique system. And when you look at the time frame also of the systems, the old systems that were is Spotty Adaga, take a look at them. Or the 12 angles, striking angles of the Philippines. People can research that. And then they're going to notice it all ties in to, of course, Cebu. But you can see the differentials of some arts, but so much similarities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty of FMA in general. It's also the beauty of Serrata Escrima, that where Dizon was.
Yes, sir.
You see other arts somewhat similar.
Yes, yes. So, you know, for the listeners listening, Espadi Daga, they may not know, is a blade and a short blade. Okay, so you have a longer blade and a short blade. So like a dagger and a machete for the people listening, if for them to formulate a picture if they're not aware of what Espadi Daga is. And now, Grandmaster Tabone, what was the reasoning, if you could explain, for the shorter stick from a perspective of a functional mechanical purpose of going to a shorter stick?
Looking at a shorter weapon, even in the Philippines, you know, if you frequented the cities, you're not going to be walking around with a 28 or 30 inch weapon, are you?
Sure.
Are you going to be walking around with something somewhat you can conceal? Mm-hmm. And I think everybody can relate to that. So, you know, walking around with a real long stick ain't going to work, especially in that era. Yes, you know, when you start looking back in the early 1900s, even up to 1939, you know, just before the Japanese invaded the Philippines, you know, how are people within the bigger cities? Do they carry a big long weapon? Yeah. I know a lot of people wore their weapons, but I'm talking about, you know, in the bigger city population. So how are you going to carry yourself?
Yes, sir.
I think a lot of the guys, they perfected the shorter weapon because, first of all, it's easier to conceal. But, you know, getting back to the training method of Felicissimo Dizon to late Grandmaster Angel Caballas, to what late Grandmaster Angel Caballas offered here, being one of the first Filipino martial artists to ever go commercial in 1966, Stockton. So, you know, like I said, Caballa Serrata was demonstrated by a certified master, Sultan Udin, back in 93, and then 94, he lived there for about 4 months. And when he demonstrated the art, the same thing of what you have learned, basic fundamentals, lock and block, flow spar, okay, various reversing movements, first thing they said, Dizon. So that makes me feel really good. It really does. You know, it goes to show you how pure late Grandmaster Angel Caballas kept the art the way he learned it under Dizon. So it's a beautiful thing, you know, for me to understand that and get to hear it.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, I've dedicated over 30 years teaching.
Sir. You know, I think one of the
screamer.
No, 100%, sir. You know, and then one of the fascinating things is that with Serrata also that I'd love for you to share is what it means, you know, in the sense to close the distance. Close. And if you could describe the philosophy of Serrata, you know, getting down to the to close the three hits, one kill concept.
Well, you know, there's another misconception of, you know, when art's this old, and you've been reading a lot of literature on what a lot of people write or how a lot of people demonstrate the art. You know, my understanding of the training I went through all the way through master's training, you may see other organizations and I can demonstrate or my students can demonstrate a simple drill. And sometimes I will get remarks like, I thought Serrata was a close art. Yes, it is a close art, but the magic of Serrata is from long range to medium to close, to close,
sir.
Not stay close and that's all you can do.
Sir.
Okay.
Yes. Absolutely. And that bridging the gap, I mean, as all martial artists can understand, whether you're a karate stylist or you're a boxer or even Brazilian jiu-jitsu, the ability to close, the skill of closing is I believe, you know, one of the fundamental skills that makes people great and their martial arts styles great.
Yeah.
And that you guys spend a lot of time on closing, the ability to close the gap, bridge the gap, close the distance. Yeah. And then once you close the distance and get in, tell us what the philosophy is once you get in. What is the point of closing for those people listening? And what do we do from there next?
You have your basic fundamentals, your first 12 angles. As taught traditionally, the way the late Grandmaster Angel Caballas taught, he would bring you up to either angle number 5, angle number 6. Then he would start what he called lock and block. That's espadilladaga, right and left counter. Okay. As soon as you learn lock and block, what the lock and block did, it taught you the footwork, okay? Inside to outside countering. And being taught Serrata Eskrima, and you're just starting it, you're saying to yourself, this is a defensive art. Hmm. But what you got to understand is it takes a feeder striking at a defender. So you're learning how to not only strike, but you're learning how to defend against the strike. Okay. What you notice in Serrata Eskrima, after you got to basic number 5 or basic number 6, and you're really introduced into range, timing, footwork, as you pursue later angles, if you notice, a lot of these angles, like a 9 and 11, You know, 11 setup is coming from long range to medium to close. It's on the strike, depending on your footwork. You either step through on a strike, one up, one back on a strike, which keeps you in range, okay? Or the footwork is utilized to bait with the 12 angles of Serrato Eskrima. So the higher level you get into advanced training, what I experienced is Angel really trained me extensively to utilize my 21 inch against 28 to 32 inch weapon. And what I mean by that is how this advanced training, the master level training came. I would strike an angle and Angel would be holding a 28 to 32 inch stick and he would counter me his Largamano system, attacking my weapon hands. And he taught me a fight method called Rising Sun to counter it. And, you know, I have filmed this. My students have demonstrated this in my volume 3-4 series all the way up. And it really stuck with me, this concept of fighting. And, you know, what you got to understand, Serrato Eskrima has 12 angles, okay? For each angle, add an abanico. What does that add to each angle? Mm-hmm. Two more angles. Yeah. So whether you're striking low or high, add the other two angles. That's where more advanced concept and technique comes into play, which isn't numbered in the 12 angles, but it's given to you by Angel as a more advanced, the master level concept. So is there just 12 angles of the system? Add the dagger in your hand, advanced master level quick checking, utilizing the dagger in your hand to strike an angle number 5, an angle 7, an angle 6. Nobody says you just got to strike and thrust the 5. Angel said, be open with it. You go after opening targets. So, you know, as advanced training began and we utilized what Angel referred to as quick checking. The quick checking can be C-ham or the dagger. So the same principles, whether you're passing an opponent C-hand with control or passing with the blade, cutting your opponent as you're passing him. That's a whole nother addition to this art. And then adding in the stick and dagger concepts with abanico counters off your strike, because the more advanced you get, that angle, each angle of Serrato becomes bait.
Sure.
It becomes bait. It's a higher level of training, but, you know, something has to be split second. Like Angel used to say, if they don't block, you hit them. If they block, you reverse and counter them. All on the close.
Yes, sir.
That's Serrato Eskrima, as taught by the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas. It's the way I learned it, and it's the way I teach it today. Now, you know, looking at Serrato Eskrima in general, you know, which isn't really a big, big art out there. There's really not a lot of active Serrato people out there. But when you look up the makeup of a lot of these Eskrima teachers that are out there, you notice a lot of them were advanced level who got out there and did well, you know, and they built up a student base. But maybe advanced, they're good at, but they never got the high level reversing or Espada y Daga. Some of them don't look like they even got Rising Sun, bro. And, you know, there's one thing the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas did. When you started your advanced training, none of this came from the school for everybody to watch. Everything was given in private lessons when you pursued an advanced or even a master's degree. So theoretically, none of us could really say, yeah, I got what he got. And I think what happened through it is time tells a story on what any of us got. I had the opportunity to film a video series with EM3 Masters Magazine, Val Majelovic. And though I only gave 3% on my video series, the rest, you got to come into the organization to train. And you understand this, bro. I didn't really leave nothing out, but I had to get the point across off the 3% I offered. I wanted to show what I learned, how I learned it, but at the same time, how I incorporated training that I had prior Kabbalah Serrata. I had Goju Ryu. My dad was a boxer. My dad trained Goju Ryu, and I followed my dad's footsteps. And then at about 19, 20 years old, I pretty much just went pure Serrata and screaming.
Yes, sir.
That was it for me. And then when late Grandmaster Angel Kabbalah passed away, I was just turning, I was either 27 or just turning 28 years old. So I've been teaching Serrata, you know, all these years, and I dedicated my life to Serrata screaming. Did I forget my past experiences and what worked before I learned Serrata? No. You know, I still hold dear to Goju Ryu, boxing, what my Uncle Sonny Palabrica shared with me, which was White Crane Kung Fu, training regimens to enhance your power, your speed, your hitting power. What he shared with me stayed with me for life. It's my Uncle Sonny Palabrica. You know, and with a lot of people, and this is ironic, I'm doing a podcast with Sifu Singh right now, Black Belt Magazine. My Uncle Sonny was one of the first writers for Black Belt Magazine. So, yeah, it's the first time I've been on Black Belt, so this is an honor for me. Sure. But it makes me think of my Uncle Sonny Palabrica.
This episode is brought to you by Martial Arts Dingo, one of the internet's newest sources for martial arts gear. That's martialartsdingo.com. Martial Arts Dingo has training equipment, sparring equipment, uniforms, and belts for all martial arts styles. With their exclusive rolling down the road pricing, there is only one price. Sales tax, shipping, handling, all included. For you karate people, Martial Arts Dingo takes pride in being your best source nationwide for Shurido brand premium karate uniforms and traditional kabuto weapons. All Shurido products are authentic and handmade in Okinawa. I'm telling you, try and find Shurido products anywhere else on the internet, it's almost impossible. But go to martialartsdingo.com and it's all right there. Martial Arts Dingo, your best source for Shurido brand products and all martial arts training gear. Check them out now, martialartsdingo.com. Use promo code DINGO916 for 10% off orders of $100 or more through December 25th.
So Grandmaster Tabone, tell me a little bit more about, you know, how important footwork is. We know that there's different types of footwork. Okay, there's a different footwork you're going to use in a longer range. And then as you bridge the gap and get closer and closer, the footwork has to change because you have to now have the ability to shift and use power instead of being light on your feet and being more elusive out in a longer range. So once you've bridged the gap, how important is it to have the proper footwork, not only from a perspective of evasion and protecting yourself from the counters, but also for power generation?
Footwork is everything. Is everything. If your footwork isn't correct while closing the gap or knowing what type of footwork you use, not only that, the pivoting concept, if you ever watch Serrata truly play and work, a lot of the pivoting, it looks almost like stomping, is power distribution, okay? You work your power with it.
Yes, sir.
You could throw angle number one with the heel up.
Yeah.
But when you slam the heel down and the tip of your weapon connects or your blade connects, shifting the hips, it's your weight distribution, power distribution. It's an art.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Could you imagine somebody really trying to work counter for counter and not move their legs? It'd be hard. Okay. And, you know, what you got to understand about the footwork in general, a lot of the footwork is picking. is to get a reaction from your opponent. So depending what kind of footwork you're utilizing, just on an angle number one, stepping through, okay, all the way forward.
Yes, sir.
Stepping from right foot back to one up one back, you control that range, you see. Stepping one up one back, and say you're fighting a longer weapon and they're trying to counter you largamano by positioning your foot one up, one back, or side by side, you can step out, you can step in. Guess what? You just close the gap even further off of a counter. So when one looks at the makeup of the footwork, it's very crucial, especially in dueling system. And that's what Angel shared with his masters and probably some of his advanced, the dueling method on how to make your opponent, first of all, commit.
Yes.
Okay. And that's what I mean by his mindset was, if you strike your opponent and he don't block, you hit him. But if he blocks, you reverse him. This all happens from here to here. Training that mindset, the techniques. From each 12 angles, you're pivoting back, you're firing in.
Sure.
Some of the striking angles are right foot forward, some are left foot forward. But for each strike of Serrano Escrima, a lot of that in advanced to master's level is baiting. So the footwork is built literally inside of the basic footwork of the 12 angles of Serrano. But it's how to utilize it in range, what you're fighting, the type of opponent you're fighting, what kind of weapon he has, is what angle am I going to attack with to make him commit while I'm closing that gap to counter his counter and kill him. So it's all in the training, bro.
So it's like a game of, what I hear you correctly, it's like a game of chess. That at,
yes.
At the end of the day, you know, when we talk about the art of war, you and I talk about it a lot. I talk about it a lot on the podcast. Yeah. And I truly believe that as martial artists, you have to study the art of war or the Book of Five Rings, Musashi, because the strategy and the philosophy behind what you're doing is very important. And,
yes.
and the central theme of the art of war is that all warfare is based on deception. And when you take a look at my understanding through the trainings with you over, I don't know, the last now eight years, that the thing is that we are leading the opponent where we want them to go and not looking for a bang bang relationship, because I think sometimes that ends up happening is that, yeah, let's say boxing, for example, or an empty handed, yeah, art, where I could give one, take one, give two, but yeah, in a bladed art, we cannot be giving one and taking one. Of course, we're going to get cut, but you can't have that philosophy and mentality. So the margin for error is really, really small. So everything
really
has
small.
To be close, perfect, and perfected.
Yeah.
So tell me about that, because, you know, I think one of the things that happens is oftentimes, and I'm sure you've experienced this many times, you and I have discussed it, is that people are looking to fight the person and not looking to fight the timings, the angle, and the creation of holes, which,
yeah,
has nothing to do with the person. It's about, has to do with putting the person where you want them to be.
Yes. Well, for the 12 angles of Serrano Escrima and Espadadaga with it, how you close the gap on an opponent, how he is in front of you, how he is standing to fight you, dictates through your experience, how am I going to attack him? The highest level of Serrano Escrima is where your offense becomes your defense. Okay? Your offense becomes your defense. Like I said, the 12 angles were taught in master's training where your offense becomes your defense. It's all illusion. For anything I do with angle one through angle 12, it was drilled in us as bait. So looking at each angle is bait. The dagger, bait. So looking at how do you get your opponent to counter you? Off of bait. I throw a one, he's largamano, he's going to try to cut me, fry lay me, ritarada me, right? if your timing is right, an angel would drill you over and over and over again, how to counter on the close against any arc. There's only so many ways one could hit your weapon hand, hit you. It's engaging your opponent, already knowing what you're going to do before you do it. That's what creates perfection in a fight. So I think the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas' training regimen, he was ingenious, you know, and analyzing Serrata Esgrima and the way it was broken down from beginner basic to intermediate to advanced master level. Okay. Very ingenious. An art form that came from the Philippines. And then Felicissimo Dizon having one student, like Grandmaster Angel Cabalas, and to be a part of this lineage, I couldn't be more happy getting to spend the kind of time I did or getting the kind of training that I got from the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas. You know, we all went our directions. We all do what we do. But I live and breathe Serrata Esgrima. Yes, you know, it became a huge part of my life, you know.
Yes, sir. So, you know, in when we talk about the training method, it's really vitally important that participants or practitioners get to go from drilling to flowing to fighting. You know, yeah. And in that, can you explain the importance of drilling and then the importance of flowing and what that structure and what the reasoning behind that is, and then how we transition from flowing to fighting in a fight?
Lock and block teaches you how to counter a weapon in the right hand or left hand or vice versa. It doesn't make a difference. Flow spar, you build once you build up lock and block, that was the beginning of learning your footwork. Of no matter what got thrown at you, of the 12 angles of Serrata Esgrima. After you got your footwork down, then Angel would offer flow sparring, give and take. Okay, counter for counter. He called it flow sparring. But, you know, looking at all these drills, you're not just going to block, counter, reblock the counter. You build flow. Beautiful. Like Angel said, you know, the more advanced your training got to master's level, he'd say if you don't get your opponent within three moves or three strikes, you're dead already. So listening from beginner, intermediate to master level, his philosophy really got crucial.
Yes, sir.
From flow sparring, thinking you're really doing good, but theoretically, everything you're throwing, you're blocking or you're countering, right? Nobody's winning on that. It's a drill.
Yes.
And it's beautiful. You know, I still teach that today. But when the fight really happens, it's a chess game, bro. If you don't get your opponent within three moves dead on, you're dead already.
Yes.
That was drilled into my mind. So when you look at beginner, intermediate, advanced, then master level, you're going to kill your opponent within three moves. That's a big change from that's doing it. Lock and block to flow spar.
Yep.
And that's why I've developed various drills like 2-2. You know, you've trained 2-2 with me. You've trained Rising Sun with me. When you look at it defensively, you're coming off a block and you're hitting your opponent 2 to 3 times.
Sure.
The third strike is usually a head shot, vital shot. But what's synonymous about Serrata Esgrima, we're always going to take out the weapon hand. That's first key. Take out the weapon hand, boom, follow up, take out the head. If it's a blade, cut the weapon arm off, boom, go for vitals. That's the mindset of Serrata Esgrima. But everything starts from out here to here to here.
Yes,
by the time you get here, you're either going to finish the fight and be victorious, or you're going to die. So in keeping that mindset,
yes, sir,
you have to hone your craft, what happens from here to here to here. Because it's all going to come like this. Either you win or you lose.
Yes, sir.
But that's the beauty of training, ain't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yes. You know, I think one of the things I appreciate, you know, is that there's a pressure testing element, which is very important because you have to know if you can or you cannot do it. And you have the concept of, you know, as you're saying, we have drilling in the beginning. So lock and block, and then you're going to flow spar where you're getting to pick up and you're flowing back and forth, but it's a give and take. But that trend, those are the fundamental building blocks that are necessary.
Building blocks.
Right? To instill awareness and angle recognition, the ability to feel what the guy's going to do. And of course, your footwork and coordinating all that. But then to go to the fight and the actual fight preparation, where we're talking about, you know, three hits and a man must fall, is a really important concept to consider, because that also takes a different mentality. Because there cannot be a time to think. There cannot be a time. It's you have to turn the switch on, and then you have to turn that switch off. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's that switching on and off that's very important that I see in your
students. You know, here's the beauty of it too, you know, of Serrato Escrima, is if you take the weapon hand out, you can show compassion to let your opponent live. And, you know, that's something Angel shared with me as he was a young man going province to province, visiting his girlfriends. He had many girlfriends, but there's one thing Angel, you know, told me that stayed with me, you know, ever since he shared this with me, is you go province to province, and he passed through a province and be planting rice. And he goes, you could always tell who the Escrimador were. I go, how, Angel? They only got one arm. A weapon hand get cut off in a duel. So they had to tuck the rice underneath their cut off arm and then use the hand to plant. So, you know, we're coming from an era that cutting off the weapon hand was common, or taking out the weapon hand was common. And then when you look at a lot of these older lineage arts, all of them counter the weapon hand right off the gate. So, you know, in being a lethal art, there's still compassion to let your opponent live if you just take out the weapon hand. You take out a Escrimador's weapon hand, he's no longer a threat.
Yes.
You cut off a opponent's hand, do you think he's going to want to fight more? Really? I that exists in the movies, right? You cut a man's hand, weapon hand off, you think he's going to want to fight? I don't think so, bro. So, you know, the art of Serrato Escrima, the whole foundation, even in the basic fundamentals, take out the weapon hand, or take out both weapon hands, spotting a dog. And you could have compassion, let your opponent live. So, you know, Angel's mindset was that. If you don't get your opponent within three, you're dead already. But that's when the training elevated to the high level. Yes, in the meantime, you wanted to build your footwork, your basic fundamentals, your blocking regimen, striking regimen. And then to portray all your drill format with lightning speed with total control. That's old school. If you could stop your stick going full bore and stop it within inches of your opponent's weapon hand head, you've trained. But that's the skill level the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas wanted his students to be at that level. Okay?
Yes.
If you can totally control a strike at anywhere on your opponent's body, okay, with total control, how hard is it going to be to hit that opponent in a real fight?
Yeah,
that's old school, bro.
Yeah,
that's the way the old school guys trained it. That's the way my teacher trained it, and that's the way he learned from Felicissimo Dizon. Yes. And let's carry on the tradition.
Yes, I think that the control element is really important. From the perspective of you know, first you have the power generation. You have to know you could hit through something. And then, you know, and I think sometimes what happens is, there may be a time in somebody's mind, they're like, oh, I'm controlling, but they haven't developed the power. So yeah. So, you know, what are you really controlling? And I think the key to what you're saying with the control here is that yeah. you've spent the time to build the power. You've hit through things. You've done yeah. it, developed it. You've closed the distance. Now you pull it back at the last minute, at that last fraction of a second, because that also, not only from a perspective of compassion, you can pull off, but also it gives you an opportunity to change and shift, yeah. right? And that's the changing and shifting. That's the next thing I want to talk to you about, you know, being like water and the ability to adapt and change and shift in a fight, because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the opponent is going to throw us.
Yeah.
But that element of going into the unknown and being certain in yourself, that's the true heart of a warrior. And tell me about developing that, because one of the things that gets in the way of that is fear. And martial artists, all humans, we all face fear. How do you get your students over fear?
I think the drill format, even full contact is good, but the drill format gets your opponent's timing, footwork, and range, speed, power, and control with his weapon. Okay, and it takes time to do that. You know, anybody that teaches Eskrima, I'm sure been hit several times
yes.
on your weapon arms, weapon hands, right? From a student that has no control. That's one of the downfalls of being a teacher, teaching any Eskrima, I believe. You're going to take some shots, you yes. know? But that's the beauty of being a teacher, right? One way to gauge a student, oh, I taught him and like my whole hand all swelled up, but about 2 months later, he's not hitting me no more. He's getting better.
Yes.
I guess that's being a Eskrima teacher. Yes. And I think we could all relate to that. Okay. But, you know, there's a lot of weapon styles that a lot of them only teach form, weapon form. See, the difference with Eskrima is we fight with it. Literally fight with it. But, you know, giving a shout out to Shion Dana Abbott, that guy's a fighter, okay? He understands the whole fighting, the whole Chambara fighting. And that's why, you know, I consider him a really good friend, high respect to Shion Abbott. And matter of fact, we'll be filming him this Thursday on iHipHop, Address the Culture. So shout out to Shion Dana Abbott on that part. But full contact weapon fighters, it's a unique breed of people. And those that ever done full contact weapon, you know, it's a whole different adrenaline. The beauty of full contact weapon done with protection or simulated weapons, one knows when he killed his opponent uncontested. And I think training Eskrima, I'm talking about weapon practitioners in general. I think to be able to get in on your opponent totally uncontested is one of the highest levels we all work toward. Okay. But, you know, it could come very easy.
Yes.
You know, if you train it, I could swing with full content with an angle one. He goes to block it. Boom. I hit him with a dagger. So one way, one could just practice that.
Yeah,
you know, and be able to get that off. But, you know, the whole training regimen of weapon is the what ifs. And like Angel's art is based on, if you strike your opponent, okay, and he don't block, you hit him. If he blocks, you reverse him and hit him. Simple thing to say, coming from late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas, who's been gone over 31 years, but his teaching carries on, goes on, you know, and all his students, wherever they are carrying on a tradition, you know. I've documented my teaching with EM3 Masters Magazine, Val Magelovic, and it was a task. Before, you know, I looked at it as, man, I'm going to show all of this. And you know, it's not going to be a secret. To me, it was a secret. But then after analyzing several arts, you could see the similarities in so many different arts. I think what it came down to is your training. But what late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas offered was a training pattern.
Yes.
To try to achieve the highest level at what he had to offer. And it was good enough for me and many others. And I stayed with it all these years, you know, and I gave my flavor of what knowledge I absorbed from the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas.
Yes,
so, you know, I just keep going and going and going. And I love what I do. So
that you do, sir, that you do, and you instill it in all your students. I want to ask you, though, you know, one of the things is that oftentimes in martial arts, we see a method based approach versus gathering techniques approach. You know what I mean? And sometimes what ends up happening is that, you know, the question we always ask is, do you want to continue to collect techniques? Or yeah. How many of those do you know you can make work? And yeah. I think that's a very honest question that we all need to actually ask ourselves, because, you know, like we've talked about before, even the six basic angles, you could train those for the rest of your life.
Yes.
And get proficient, because in fighting, that's what's good. What can you pull off? What can you do under pressure is yeah. what you have. And of course, as a martial artist, we are artists. We do want to express our body. We want to learn different things. Yes. We have this open mind. But finding the balance between what we could actually do, or we have confidence in what we could do, versus continuing to, oh, you know, I'm going to go to another seminar this weekend and I'm going to yeah. learn 50 techniques. And then I'll go to another seminar the next weekend and learn another 50 techniques. And it's almost yeah. like, okay, that's cool. But what can we actually pull off? And I think that's something that's a very important consideration for martial artists to have.
Me, like you said, you know, one can learn the first six angles. One can learn the first three angles. One could learn angle number one and make it work for on the street, self-defense.
Yes.
Five angles is the most common strikes you're going to deal with on the street. Am I correct?
Yes, sir.
The most common striking pattern is an angle one with an angle two comeback, right?
Yep.
Defending hand against hand, somebody's going to throw angle number one, a straight right,
yep.
follow up with a left. That's basically angle one and two.
Yes.
So just learning the angle one and two can help somebody survive on the street, countering a right cross and a left. Okay. So, you know, it's how hard one wants to train to be efficient to survive a common attack on the street. But for a lot of these guys, you know, in law enforcement and military, they want to go deeper because they're dealing with a whole different type of opportunity of attacks on them. So, you know, I think Filipino martial arts in general is great for people in law enforcement, military, and it's being taught worldwide. And you're one of those guys, you know, that teach worldwide. So you understand what I'm talking about.
Yes.
But,
yes.
You know, I've been teaching so long now, and, you know, I've had students of mine show up, teenagers, and tell me, Uncle Darren, you know, I want to thank you. For what? Because I got attacked by some guys, man, four of my friends, and they all had baseball bats, about six of them, man, and they start knocking guys out, and off of something you taught me how to disarm, I took the bat, and I had to use the bat to save some friends' lives. I want to thank you, Uncle Darren. This guy was only about 100, probably 15 pounds, you know, a young Asian kid. And he got attacked and he stopped at a bus stop. I guess a whole bunch of guys rolled up and went after all the Asians. And he had to go to court on it. He got off on it. But they were literally trying to break their heads with baseball bats. And he survived it off of what he learned in my class. So, you know, when you get something back like that, you know, and a young teenager thanks you. He goes, you saved my life. This training saved my life. Just that. But it's happened many more than that. Yeah, I had to use this. I had to use that. It worked. It worked. It worked. As a teacher, you want to hear that, you know? it's almost like what you've committed your life of teaching to, you know, if you heard firsthand, and even three people tell you what you taught saved my life.
Yes.
That makes up for all the years I've been teaching. I helped save a life.
Yes.
But, you know, to have students teaching what we have to offer, and you can relate to this, we want it to work. We want what we have to offer to work. And I've already lived long enough to already hear that. I've taught long enough to already, hey, man, your stuff works. And I think that's all any of us want to hear, is that positive feedback that what you're teaching works, is not bullshit.
Yes.
And with the millions of martial artists teaching, you know, we all get to a level and we all teach students. But what it all comes down to, does it work? Can it save you on the street? And that's very important this day and age of what's going on, you know, within a lot of these cities and communities. It's bad out there, and it's not all the time you're going to be defending against a weapon, a club, a knife. You know, there's a lot of people getting shot out there, just randomly shot, several people, malls, streets, outside of clubs and everything else. But, hey, you know, there's a lot of people also getting attacked with weapons.
Yes.
So us as teachers sharing what we hold dear to us and what we believe in, if we could help somebody live and attack, that makes everything we do even more sentimental to us, especially what we commit to, you know, in teaching. Bottom line, it's all good. All forms of self-defense are good. It's better than not having nothing and curling up in a ball and getting a beat down, right?
Sure.
You give your students a chance to survive. And being a part of that over 30 years, 40 years, it's my passion to be a teacher. And I know it's yours too. It's like a light switch turning off, you know, and you experience this every time you run a clinic, every time we do a legacy.
Yeah.
Each and every headliner, as soon as he gets on that floor, it's clicking on his zone. And it's beautiful. I love turning on that switch and offering what I believe in. Okay. I believe in what I teach. I believe in Serrano and Screaming, as taught by the late Grandmaster Angel Caballos, as he was taught by the late Felicissimo Dizon. So, you know, here's the lineage. Here's a lineage right there. I'm just one out of several people, you know, talking about it on this show. I love what I do. You know,
yeah, I think that's
I love seeing students grasp. All of us do. I've seen your students grasp what you have to offer.
Yes. It is truly a rewarding feeling. I think like a few things you said here are really important that I want to recap. And one of them is that the fact that as martial artists, I was just speaking at an event in Hawaii, right? To non-martial artists. And sometimes in their minds, and I'm sure everybody listening can agree with this, they think that we are out to hurt people. But really what's driving us is to save lives. So first starting with ourselves, because it's about love, right? I need to love myself enough to protect myself, right? And then my family, and then anybody in need that's out there. And I think that's what really makes it a different, it's that warrior's way that keeps us going, right? And like you said, you get feedback of a kid coming up to you and said, hey, you know, this saved my life. You get feedback, I'm sure you've had many times, a kid comes up to you who's a shy kid. He's like, hey, you know, you gave me the courage to go up on stage and speak. And now I got this job, or I did this musical performance, or asked a girl out that I really like. And it transfers into every piece of our life, you know?
Yes, it does.
You live the warrior's way. And, you know, one of the things that makes you a great teacher of the many beyond the technical and the strategic and understanding that is that you teach with your heart.
Yes.
You lead with your heart, you know? And what advice would you give? Because there's a lot of people listening who are teachers. How can they be better teachers?
continue to love what you do and never stop learning how to teach. I think we evolve, okay? You know, back when I first co-founded Angels Disciples, it's about 27 years old. And I'm going to be 60 this summer. So I had many years, you know, to teach. And I seen myself evolve. All I cared about in the beginning was full contact. Okay. It's full contact. That's all we did. Full contact. I just go hit this tournament, that tournament, this tournament. Well, what it happened in time is, okay, we're very successful in tournament fighting. What I need to do is technically, okay, build my curriculum as taught to me and how to make my curriculum work for those that want to learn.
Yes, sir.
And in doing so, you know, it was about sharing more. You know, before I'd have maybe a dozen students, 20 students. And, you know, early on, Angels Disciples, we used to attract a lot of football players, boxers, guys that fought in Golden Gloves, track runners, exceptional athletes. And we take these exceptional athletes and teach them full contact. And in doing so, we had a lot of success fighting full contact. That was all good, you know. And then what I did notice is a lot of students that got so involved with the full contact, whenever there wasn't a tournament to prepare for, they'd only come around when they hear about a tournament because all they wanted to do is fight.
Yeah.
So as time went by, I said, I need to concentrate on good teachers. And that's why I really had to get my curriculum going. So it was not only good for full contact fighters, you know, attending full contact tournaments, but for those that are going to be future teachers. And the best way I came up with that after 20 years is I need to build some training videos. And it took me 20 years to do that, bro. And that's already, what, almost 10, 15 years ago. And I think it was the best thing I ever done because somebody across the world can pick up my volume 1, 2, 3 and watch it and say, is this art for me? You know, do they appreciate it? And then they contact me later and then either find a way to get me up there or they fly down here to Stockton and train it. I think is the best thing I did was go technical in teaching. Mm-hmm. And what better than doing it in a video instructional series?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, I really put a lot of energy, first of all, getting my students who I had portrayed to a level where it fit in. It had to be good enough to where somebody ain't going to look at it and say, oh, that's horseshit. Nah, that's on top. That's good. That's worth learning. And when we do our videos, we don't know how the public is ever going to take them because sometimes, man, there's a lot of guys out there that are haters and they're not really truly trying to look at what you're offering. They just want to criticize. We all got to deal with that. But yeah. And doing my series, you know, I can't tell you how much great feedback I've gotten back worldwide, people all over the world, Europe. And it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. So you let the positive outweigh the negative. Don't even look at the negative and just go forward. Take that high road, bro, and keep on going. That's something else I could let some of the viewers hear, you know, what I have to say. Let nothing stop.
That's vital, man. Because in the day and age we live in, I mean, if you are putting yourself out there, first of all, it takes a lot of courage for people to put themselves out there.
Yes, it does.
And the very first thing, you're not really going to get many people who are going to congratulate you, but unfortunately the first thing you're going to get is complaining, criticizing, and condemning. And as martial artists, if we can understand that, you could imagine the state that person is in, that that's all the energy that they spew out, you know, that they didn't really grasp what martial arts is about.
You know,
and they haven't healed through, because somebody was complaining about them and somebody's hurt them, right? And so they're just proliferating the story. And I think one of the things that martial arts does is gives us an opportunity to really break the mold of who we are, break the mold of things that have come before us, because we have an opportunity to spread this to the world. It's the greatest profession in the world, at least to you and to everybody listening. You know, on this podcast, we could talk about that. And something that you've done is really amazing, you know, is the community work that you've done in building a community, in bringing Filipino martial arts to the world. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the legacy events that you've done. We're going on number 9. I'm honored to have been a part of all of them from 4 onwards, but it's a very unique event that you don't really see happen, where you bring together masters of all these different systems. But what was the driving force first? And first, tell us what legacy is and what drove you to create it.
Well, legacy, honoring the grand masters of FMA, the first number ones kicked off in Stockton, California. And, you know, at the time I was looking at this legacy event, I had already filmed volume 1, 2, 3. Okay. And then I start really communicating with a lot of the area escrimadores. And one was the late Grandmaster Tony Samara. And he had showed up at a couple of my tournaments, Prior Legacy. And we had a really good time just talking, you know. And he's a very inspirational man. And I seen the way he was promoting late Grandmaster Leo Giron. And I really admired, you know, how much he put into his promotion. At the same time, you know, talking with a lot of the Serrata brothers, that we need to develop something to honor Angel too. So with that mindset, I began communicating with other Serrata people. And I was able to bring a lot of them together in honor of Angel Cabalas. So in doing so, I brought about 5, 6 various Serrata masters, going back from when Angel first started all the way up until his passing. And we came together and it was beautiful. So in focusing on Serrata in the beginning, then I started focusing on all the arts of Stockton. And I did that. And with like-minded people, and the rich history of Filipino martial arts coming from Stockton, California, that was the starting point of legacy, honoring the grand masters of FMA, Stockton, California. We've reached out really big, and you've had the opportunity to attend, I believe, 4. And I think you're getting ready for your 5th, right?
Yep. Number legacy? 9. Yep.
It's a beautiful thing, ain't it?
Yes, sir.
It's a beautiful thing. So, you know, once filming Legacy 1, the Legacy 2, Legacy 3, what had happened is a lot of people start reaching out, or I started reaching out to other people to see if they'd be interested in becoming a part of the Legacy. Back then, to be honest with you, I was only going to film 4. But with the momentum and the reaction and people contacting me and saying, T-Bone, are you going to do another legacy? I go, you know, yeah, I will. Hey, T-Bone, you're going to do another one in Hawaii? It kept going, bro. It just kept going. But, you know, it's probably one of the most amazing choices I made, was to continue the legacy. You know, and with it, it seems like the universe opened up and great things are happening. Support from My Hip Hop TV, Address the Culture, iFreedom World. And it's not only just about FMA now, but it's about all martial arts. okay? And it's also about atrocities on what's taking place. Hawaii, you know, developers are encroaching on cemeteries from 100 years ago. My great-grandmother's cemetery is one of them. So, you know, in tapping in with iHipHop TV, Our Freedom World, has given me a platform not only to promote the legacy, but atrocities that are happening, you know. There is nothing that we cannot approach to talk about on Address the Culture. So, you know, this has been a platform now going on, what, 6 months I've been a part of. You've been on that show, and we had a blast. But this is amazing, being on Black Belt Navy, you know.
Well, it's a real honor to have you, and I think you're one of the premier teachers out there. You know, we always talk, one of the things is that martial arts is so much more than the movements. And to us, it's not a hobby. It's a lifestyle. As a matter of fact, that's our theme, right?
Yes.
The goal of my podcast was to actually, it's inspired by you. You know, you're one of the people that inspired it, because I saw what you did with the legacy events, that you were bridging the gap between martial artists of different Filipino styles, bringing them together, bringing all their students together. You know, imagine you have, you know, I think in the last one, there was up to 18 different masters from all the different styles, all their students coming together and training together, and you're bridging the gap. And so that when we bridge the gap and we bring communities together, we get not only to share, but together we're stronger. Because outside of us as martial artists, we want to push martial arts to the world. And to push martial arts to the world, we all have to, as one tide, have to rise together. And I think, and many listeners can feel that, that, you know, in martial arts communities, that if we can come together instead of...
I think also the beauty of legacy is, look where legacy is today in Europe with Brother Claudio Morelli. Big shout out to Claudio Morelli, doing what he's doing with the legacy and the FMMA league that hopefully fires up this summer.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just did a show with Claudio Morelli, and it gave him an opportunity to talk about his legacy connection, first in Stockton, the legacy four. You got to meet Brother Claudio. And, you know, when you look at legacy today, it's international, it's worldwide. And with the platform, with iHipHop TV, iFreedom World, you know, big shout out to Audi19, you know, big shout out to P-Star, Tone Big Wall, to opening a platform to promote and further promote the legacy, but also, you know, humanitarian, any topics, you know, that can help against atrocities and everything else. You know, this platform has really opened up for me. So, you know, it gives me a really, really good feeling to make a difference for the better. And I think at my age now, I could truly say I truly love what I'm doing. Love what I'm doing, you know.
That's wonderful. That's truly wonderful. I think, you know, the key is that we're here to bridge the gap. You know, we're here to bridge the gap between martial arts as styles and systems and as practitioners. But most importantly, that martial arts is not just a hobby. It's a way of life to us. And if it's a way of life to you, then every situation and circumstance you approach with this ability to solve a problem, right? And that's what we're there for, whether it's, you know, our creed on the show, sir, is wherever I go, everyone's a little bit safer. Wherever I am, anyone in need has a friend.
Yes.
But when I come home, they're happy to see me because it's a good life. I think that's one of
it's
the things.
Positive.
As long as we're living, it's a good life.
Yeah.
And it's a very short life that we have too. You know, track of time, and time goes by like that. You know, time is one thing to catch.
So, bro, you know, I'm grabbing the bull by the horns. I'm going for a ride. I ain't stopping.
Okay, that's how I'm living life, brother. Yeah. I appreciate that about you. You know, there's one question I want to ask you. The final question is the one I ask all my guests. This is the Black Belt Podcast. You know, what does a black belt, or, you know, equivalent, a master's degree, or in even in Serrata, what it is, advanced master's degree, your equivalent of a black belt would be. What does a black belt, the idea of a black belt, mean to you?
To me, it was the beginning of my life of martial arts, truly, because first of all, getting to that level, okay? But can you teach the level you were given? Yes, when I got my master's degree under the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas, the kind of training it was, you know, bro, I couldn't even knock on somebody's door. I had to hit it with my elbows or kick the door and pretend and hold my hand up when they opened the door. My hands were really beat up bad, you know. I mean, because of the level of training, you know. And I put my heart and soul into it. Put it this way, bro. When I was going through my master's training, I had to sleep on the floor away from anybody and everybody, because the kind of sensitivity training that the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas pushed me at to that level, that if I was asleep and somebody touched me, I could hurt them. So I ended up sleeping on my living room floor. I laid out, you know, I couldn't even sleep on the couch. I want somebody else to sit there too, because if they sat next to me, boom, my reaction, I could hurt somebody. Almost hurt my wife several times. Even sleeping on the living room floor, she'd come home from working a swing shift job, open the door, and I'd wake up, roll up, and hold back from nailing her. It was that bad. It's the kind of training that had you where don't even touch the guy on the shoulder. So, you know, that's the way the late Grandmaster Angel Cabalas pushed me. Okay, sensitivity. And looking back, you know, being that young man, you know, back then, 26, 27 years old, I try to teach my students at that level too. And I do. But then they got to worry about hurting somebody in their household, waking them up from a dead sleep. But then again, Herinder, I believe you're the kind of guy that trains to that level I'm talking about. But you got to have it here. You got to have it here. Whoever hard you train, you know, don't come up on a guy training high level and catch him by surprise. Mm-hmm. Something might happen. You understand. You can relate to it.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you can relate to what I'm talking about. But, you know, getting my master's degree, it's like a whole new chapter of my life began. And there's one thing Angel shared with me. He goes, Darren, you want to stay proficient at your training. You get a relative, you get a friend, you get anybody. Don't ever stop teaching the art, because it'll keep you sharp. So I took his word for it. I started teaching relatives. I started picking up students to hold on to everything I trained, from beginner, advanced, to master's level. If you don't teach it, you forget it. And I started teaching at a young age, at 26, 27 years old. And that's what helped me maintain the knowledge that was given to me. At the same time, my own personal growth that I contributed to what I learned. So I think, you know, when you say, you know, the black belt level, teaching level, I think when you're awarded that rank, it's just the beginning of a whole nother chapter. You could absorb all this knowledge, but can you teach what you absorbed? That's the fun part, and that's a lifetime commitment that's been with me.
That's wonderful. Beautifully said, sir. It's been a real, real honor to have you on the show. I'm sure that
you
really enjoyed listening to your wisdom, and thank you for sharing time with me. And thank you for sharing all the years of lessons and training. And I look forward to more. This is just the beginning.
Most definitely, brother.
Yes, sir.
I'll see you at Legacy 9 Las Vegas, September 3rd.
Yes, sir.
We're going to have a blast. All right, brother.
Absolutely.
Martial arts is the greatest vehicle to discover human potential. My friends, follow, like, subscribe, and share this message with the world. The Black Belt Podcast can be found on Apple, Spotify, Google, and all major broadcasting outlets. I'm your host, Harinder Singh. And always remember, wherever you go, everyone's a little bit safer. wherever you are, anyone in need has a friend. And when you come home, they're happy to see you. It's a good life.